Welcome to the worst nightmare of all. Reality.
Explore the lesser-known stories of our unknown world. Join the pursuit of the paranormal with Ash and Greg.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing, Ash?
I'm good.
Long time no speak.
Long time. Very long time.
How's it going? How's the preparations for Minicon going?
We are less than 2 weeks from Minicon, and I don't know why I do it to myself after all the stress of last year. Let's see. Oh, let's do it again, but bigger. And now I'm just regretting my life choices. But we're getting there.
I'm looking forward to it. Got loads of T-shirts printed off with our new designs and whatnot. We got some business cards with QR codes coming. So
can meet all the listeners.
Meet all the listeners. There's loads of people on Twitter saying, I'll see you there. It's like, hey, really excited to be there. And yeah, no, it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to it. So we are joined yet again today by Craig Bryant. Welcome along, Craig.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to be back again for, what is it now, about the third time, I think. You must be gluttons for punishment.
No, we love it. We love talking to you. And I know when we're talking, we always sort of, there's always more stuff we can talk about. So it's really good to have you on. And thank you for joining us. It is, it's great. So first of all, how's the podcast going? Give yourself a little shout out on that.
Yeah, good. I've just actually done my 30th episode, which felt like a little bit of a milestone. Actually a chap who was chatting about your upcoming Minicon, Jason Gleaves. So yeah, we had a good chat about various UFO stuff. Yeah, it's good. It's just as anybody who does this as a hobby and not as a living, you find that you have very little time to squeeze in. Life takes over, and sometimes it's quite difficult. It's difficult to find guests as well. Sometimes, you can hit a bit of a brick wall, and it can become quite frustrating, especially, when you get let down at the last minute, or you have to let somebody else down at the last minute, because things happen. It can be a little bit frustrating, but no, I think in general it's going well. Talking to some really, really good people, meeting some really good people as well. So,
yeah, I think that's one thing we've noticed, is that we've spoken to so many interesting people, so many friendly people. Everybody seems to be really friendly. Everybody, because they're into the subject.
Yeah.
They've all got a passion. They're all friendly. They're all welcoming. So that's been something that we've definitely taken from it.
And then you find you're sort of going round again, aren't you? You're starting to go back over your same guests, and you're hoping that they've got new things to say. So hopefully I'll have some new things to say tonight, hopefully.
So your podcast is the Paranormal Pendle podcast.
Yeah.
And people can find that at Spotify, Apple, everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah, everywhere where you normally get your podcast from, it's all over the place. Yeah.
Awesome. So yeah, thank you for taking the time as well. Like you said, it's particularly tricky to fit everything in.
Yeah.
I think we've said it before, when it's one person doing it as well.
Yeah.
That's even more of a challenge. We're lucky that there's me and Ash to, if I'm feeling a bit, Ash will
It does have its rewards. I mean, I've just got an email tonight from a guy who's doing a production for Amazon, a six-part production on various subjects. It's a local film crew, but they're doing stuff on the paranormal, UFOs, local like Todmorden UFO, for instance, and haunted pubs and all that sort of thing. Quite interesting subjects actually about British Aerospace, which we can sort of have a bit of a chat about actually if you want. It is something that I've thought about with regards to a lot of these triangular UFOs that we keep seeing around this area. He's asked me to go along and be a guest, so I'm just waiting now for the filming dates and the filming location and so on. So that has obviously come about because of the podcast. So, you know, people are not only going to have to put up with listening to my very, very rough Lancashire accent, but they're also going to have to look at my rough Lancashire face as well. So, but
that's You're beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, so are you, Greg. but that's quite exciting. So, yeah, it's just a good example of how things can sort of snowball. I mean, you guys do your mini-con, you get all that side of things done and all that. Can be stressful, you know. I'm sure it's not the easiest thing, Ash, but well, you know, I mean, it's great that we can sort of branch out into these sort of things, so and we get to meet different people, and it all leads into, you know, into getting yourself more known in the community, really. I think,
yeah, for sure. Shame not coming.
Well, I will do. I will come to the next one. I will definitely make an effort. It's just like I said, you know, life unfortunately does get in the way, and I can't do everything really that I want to. You know, I've got a family and I've got a full-time job, and, you know, I've got hobbies outside of this as well. And, you know, sometimes weekends I just like to put my feet up and, you know, have a beer and just try and relax a little bit, really, because, you know, my job can be a little bit stressful at times. So I like to try and wind down and that, you know, at weekends.
Cool. So you talk about the British aerospace stuff. Why don't we start there?
I mean, it's not something that I've written about, but it is something that I've sort of looked into and done some research into. And there's a theory that certainly up here in the Northwest, there's quite a few British aerospace facilities where, you know, they test various engines. I mean, for instance, they were heavily involved in the Eurofighter back in the day, British Aerospace at Samlesbury, and also there's quite a few on the Fylde Coast as well. And there seems to be a theory going around at the minute that there is something to do with are they involved at all in these sightings of triangular UFOs. And this does lead into one of the chapters I did in the book, actually, and obviously you've asked me on to talk about the new book, The Black Monks of Accrington. Not only do I talk about paranormal stuff, as I did with my first book, but I also talk a little bit about UFO stuff and a bit about cryptids as well. One of the interesting things that I found, actually, I was doing some research into Morecambe Bay, and I don't know whether people, your listeners know, first of all, where Morecambe Bay is. It's in the northwest of England. It's sort of the bit on the west coast of Lancashire and the south coast of Cumbria. So it's that sort of semi-circle-ish, if you like, bit of land. And it's where the River Kent flows into the Irish Sea, in effect. But it's a big, it's about 200 square miles of mudflats, basically. It's an estuary area of special scientific interest. Both for things like, you know, wading birds and wildlife, and also there's a lot of archaeology in the area as well. They've found stone tools dating back over 10,000 years in the area. So there was definitely, you know, people living in the area going back to around about the time, really, where Britain started to be populated from, you know, the European land bridge, probably earlier than that. And it's an area, really, which is, you know, you can sort of quite understand why it was populated by, you know, people going back sort of tens of thousands of years, because, you know, it's an area where there's a lot of resources, but over the years there've been, this is obviously more recent, of course, we're talking the last sort of 100 years, really, where there's been written reports, and I don't doubt that actually there's been sightings going back further, but it's just that, you know, the reports haven't been documented, of large numbers of triangular UFOs across the Bay Area. Now, interestingly, as I said, there's the BAE Systems facilities there, the research and development facilities, but you've also got a couple of nuclear power stations as well. There's the one at Heysham, which is just to the south of Morecambe, which is a big power station. I think there's two reactors there, actually. And then further up the coast, up the Cumbrian coast, you've of course got Sellafield. which, although I don't think it actually produces power anymore, it's just sort of, it does something with spent fuel rods, I think, something like that. And there's been a lot of sightings over the years, certainly recently, of these triangular UFOs in and around the areas where these power stations are, and across the bay. We've got reports going back to the 1930s, 1920s, even going back to the late 19th century, so even before powered flight, where there have been sightings which have been reported in the local newspapers of strange triangular objects in the sky. There was one in the 1930s where a group of fishermen who were out on the bay saw at least a dozen of these objects in formation. There was a sighting back in the 1980s, I think it was, late 80s, where there were eyewitnesses from all around the bay, so right from sort of Morecambe and Heysham and Sunderland Point, which is probably the southernmost point of Morecambe Bay, right all the way around to Barrow in Furness, which incidentally is where they build and launch nuclear submarines as well. That's part of BAE facilities. This particular sighting, there was upwards of 30 craft, and this was in broad daylight, and they were all described as black triangular craft. Now, if they are military craft and they are being tested, they're not being very secretive about it. And certainly if you go back, you know, probably to any time before the 1970s, there's just no way we had the technology anyway to be able to produce crafts of that type. And it's interesting because I was talking to my last podcast guest was Jason Gleaves, and we were discussing triangular UFOs. And he said, well, you know, he said, you look at these triangular UFOs and you look at, you know, the American stealth bombers of the, you know, last 20 years up close, and you can see that there is a correlation in the shape and everything else, which is fine. That may well explain away some of the sightings, some of the more recent sightings. But when you go back through historical records, and I'm not just talking about, you know, the northwest of England, I mean, these things show up all over the place. You're going back years and years, tens of years, way before we had the technology to produce the, you know, these types of craft. So I mean, Morecambe Bay to me is a very special place. It's an area that I love visiting. I've always visited it ever since I was fairly young. And it's an area that's got an awful lot of atmosphere to it. It just feels like there's a very special atmosphere. It's a very special place. There is definitely something a little bit otherworldly about it, especially when the tide's out and you can just, you know, look across the, you know, miles and miles of mudflats. And, you know, there's archaeological objects, for instance, that turn up. I mean, the sands are shifting all the time. There are probably a lot of magnetic fields and various other things, I think, that, you know, especially with water as well, you get a lot of energy, I think, that, you know, attached to bodies of water. And obviously, you know, the water's coming, the tide's coming in and out twice a day. It must be producing energy of some sort. There must be something going on that's attracting these crafts in. And, you know, like I say, there's you know, going back to prehistory, people have lived in the area. And there's archaeological things coming up all the time, through, you know, coming up through the sand and with the shifting sands and everything else, they're finding artifacts and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's a very, very interesting place. And there is definitely something going on with these triangular UFOs, but what they are and why they're being particularly attracted to that area along the Foul Coast and up towards, you know, up into Cumbria as well, really, along the Cumbrian coast and up to Sellafield. Could it have something to do with the nuclear power stations? Could it have something to do with the geology of the bay itself? Could it be something that's been going on for tens of thousands of years? You know, is that why ancient man first went to that area and settled there? You know, was there some sort of interaction going on with these craft going back, you know, maybe thousands of years? Who knows? But it is a very interesting place, and I urge people, if they're ever in the northwest of England, just to visit there, because it is a fabulous place.
It's funny you mention sort of the the crap being seen, like testing it over a public place where lots of people can see it. Because remember back in the 90s, there's been quite a few over the motorways in the northwest. Like, there's a couple over the M56, quite a few being seen over the M6. These are like some of the busiest motorways in the country. So you'd think, why would they be testing secret craft like over dense populated areas? Remember one, I think it was 95, where a plane, I might be wrong on the information, but there's a plane that got overtook by a black triangle craft and it's approaching to Manchester Airport.
Yeah, yeah.
The pilots reported it, and I don't think they ever sort of resolved that case.
No. The M56, which is, you're right, it's the motorway that goes down to Manchester Airport, and also the M62 as well has had a lot of sightings along the M62 corridor between Liverpool and Manchester. Mm. So yeah, there's been quite a lot of sightings over there as well. So yeah, if they are secret military craft that they're testing, they're not being very secret about it. It's as simple as that. Which to me immediately negates that theory. They are something else. You know, you don't test probably $1 billion aircraft in broad daylight over heavily populated areas. It's just not what the military do.
Yeah, because you've got Scotland not too far away where it's a lot less populated, or especially even going out over into the Atlantic a little bit and stuff where you're not going to get seen apart from maybe an odd boat.
No, exactly. It is a bit weird. Yeah, I mean, I know the RAF do a lot of testing, a lot of flying over Scotland. They've obviously got air bases up there. It would make a lot more sense to test any craft over the Highlands of Scotland where it's extremely, low population.
I hear Calvine's a good place to fly secret aircraft.
what are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah.
I don't actually know too much about that, to be honest with you.
So, it was the photograph that's come out recently that was shot at Calvine that supposedly was hanging up on a Ministry of Defence wall when Nick Pope was in charge, I don't know, of the UFO desk.
Which didn't really exist unless... I don't know whether you want me to go into that or not.
We can go anywhere you like, Craig. But before you do, I just wanted to pick up on one thing. So you were mentioning about UFOs and nuclear power stations, and the fact that there's two up there.
Yeah.
And also energy and water, again, something I want to touch on.
Yeah, sure.
So UFOs have historically been linked to nuclear reactors, weapon silos. There's a lot of famous cases where they shut down nuclear missile, loaded missile silos.
Yeah.
So with what's going on in the Ukraine and the threat of nuclear war, there's been increasing sightings of UFOs over the Ukraine, allegedly.
I believe so.
So do we think that if Putin's going to press the button, because who knows, he might do, at that point, will we see the nuclear intervention again from these craft, do you think?
Well, we wouldn't know, would we?
I don't know. He might do. He might just be going, why are they not going off? Why aren't they working?
Yeah, why is it not working? Somebody's taken the plug out.
But it does interest me that this whole thing. Would we see it if it came to pass?
I mean, if they did launch missiles, then, you would hope that if that's what these craft are doing, if they're watching facilities purely for that reason. I mean, are they watching nuclear power stations in case there are accidents? I don't know whether any were sighted. I mean, we probably wouldn't know with Chernobyl because it was obviously it was part of the Soviet Union at the time. So it's unlikely that if there were any reports of any similar craft in and around Chernobyl at the time that went, went into meltdown, whether we'd actually, the Russians would release that information. I mean, I've got no doubt that governments do know that there are things out there, and I've got no doubt that there has been contact. And I think that, you know, over the last certainly 30 years, there's been a massive leap forward in technology. And I think that that has been facilitated not entirely by the human race. I think some of the massive leap forward that we've made, especially with things like microchips and, you know, miniaturization and all that sort of thing, I think has probably been facilitated in some part by other interests, shall we say. But with regards to, you know, if somebody did launch intercontinental ballistic missiles, you would hope that if we are being observed for whatever reason, that they would step in and say, no, you're not doing that. But then, you know, unless we were some sort of some sort of experiment or some sort of, you know, pet project, you know, why would they do that? I mean, we are. It's an interesting subject. I've read quite a bit on things like, you know, the Fermi paradox, for instance, and you know, is what are the chances of life being on other planets close enough to be able to travel to us, etc. And I suppose, really, when you look at the human race in the round, we are quite an aggressive species. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't going to be other spacefaring species out there that could be equally or even more aggressive, and you know, you only have to watch Hollywood films to work, you know, to work out that we've got quite a good imagination when it comes to things like that. But it's entirely possible that we are just being watched, because it may get to the stage where we are deemed a threat, especially, you know, when we start to finally master space flight. But I think that will probably come at the same rate of advancement that the last 30 odd years of, let's say, you know, computing and quantum computing has happened, probably with a bit of intervention from somewhere else, shall we say, not all entirely off our own back. And, you know, maybe we're just being observed because we're getting to that point now where there's going to be a breakthrough in, you know, propulsion that allows us to travel faster, because obviously the furthest we can go at the minute, you know, it takes us, what is it, 2.5 years to get to Mars. You know, there's got to be a massive breakthrough in propulsion, hasn't there, in order to get us from A to B very quickly. So, yeah, maybe we're just being observed. Maybe we're being drip-fed information and technology, and maybe, you know, these craft do hang around nuclear facilities, hang around military facilities, just purely to keep an eye on what's going on. And if it looks like, you know, things are going a bit wrong, you know, are they going to step in and sort it out for us? Who knows?
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Not sure how much you sort of keep an eye on things that's going on in America, but recently there's been quite a lot of talk. This sort of links in what you've been saying or alluding to about some of our technology isn't maybe all man-made. It's all, we're getting influence from somewhere. Yeah. So Gary Nolan recently said that there's people within the government that are going to come out and say there have been crash retrievals. And that whistleblower is going to be coming forward. It's just a matter of time. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that sort of topic of crash retrievals. Is that where we are getting this technology from?
I don't know. Maybe. You know, we may well be reverse engineering stuff. I mean, there's obviously been quite a number of fairly famous incidents over the years. I mean, I would find it very difficult to believe that everything that we've done with technological advancements over the last 30, 40 years has come from, let's say, Roswell. You know, I'm sure that some of it has, but I'm also fairly convinced that we are actually being physically given technology, drip-fed technology, shall we say, in order to just advance us at the right rate, not to advance us too quickly. But I don't, you know, I do firmly believe that they retrieved something at Roswell. I firmly believe that they've been, reverse engineering it. Maybe not entirely successfully. Otherwise, you know, we'd have faster than light craft, maybe, or at least, you know, craft that could leave, you know, anti-grav or whatever it is they use to be able to leave the confines of the Earth. You know, without having to strap on massive rockets in order to, you know, to leave the gravity of the Earth. So, because obviously these craft that we're seeing are acting, behaving in ways that, you know, our aircraft, our military aircraft, even can't maneuver at that speed or maneuver with that precision. You often read reports of people seeing objects hovering and then suddenly just disappearing off at high speed. You know, the speed that these craft are traveling at, we don't seem to have anything that certainly we know about militarily that can accelerate at that sort of speed. So, I've got no doubt that there's been, I certainly think since the Second World War, which in itself seemed to be quite an acceleration of technology, you know, especially with the German rocket program. I think at that point, obviously, when we, you know, split the atom and we started building nuclear weapons, I think that was the point where we started to be observed more readily than we had been previously. I think we'd possibly before that just been a bit of a, you know, backward society, you know, like you see on Star Trek, you know, a non-warp society, as it were, that, you know, they observe from a distance but don't get involved in. But I think once we'd split the atom and that had, you know, given us the power to be able to be extremely destructive, I think that's when they started to observe us a little bit more. And that obviously ties in when we start seeing more UFO sightings after the Second World War. And of course, you know, Roswell was, you know, only a few years after the end of the Second World War. And you know, the first atomic bomb, well, first two atomic bombs being exploded. I'm absolutely convinced that Roswell happened, and I'm convinced that it's happened in other countries as well. It's just that some have been better at keeping it quiet than others.
One thing that does get me, and we talk about sort of retrieved technology or whatnot, it seems to only be computer related, because there's no propulsion help, it looks like, because we're still using the same technology to escape the Earth's atmosphere as we was back in the time when we went to the moon.
Yeah,
it's still literally a rocket.
Yeah, it's just solid.
It's still it's just a flame attached to some propulsion, and that's it. And it's the same with cars.
Yeah,
I mean, we're getting into batteries now. That's cool, but we're still reliant on oil. Essentially, we've got this internal combustion engine that's been going for like 100 years, and we're still no further forward that we know about in technology to power a car. And it just seems very odd.
I think there are economic reasons for that. And I certainly think that, you know, the oil producing countries, OPEC, Russia,
they don't want us to stop using oil, do they?
No, they don't. And I think that sometimes can put a bit of a cramp on research and development. And it's only, as you quite rightly say, it's only recently with batteries, you know, that we've started to move away from the internal combustion engine. But it is interesting. I wonder whether one of the reasons why we haven't advanced with propulsion is because we're not being allowed to. I think there are certain issues with the laws of physics, in effect, you know, with time dilation, with speeds, with distances and everything else, which I think, you know, certain civilizations or civilizations that are observing us and are visiting us have mastered, but they're not prepared to give us that technology yet because we're probably not mature enough or adult enough to be able to use it in the right way.
Yeah, we interestingly spoke to Ben Walgate from 401 Files, and we were talking about the fact that we're preparing to go to Mars and colonize Mars, but will we be allowed to go?
Yeah.
And then the question is, who wouldn't allow us to go?
And what will we find on Mars when we get there?
Because if we find stuff that is even human-related there, it's... Wow, that's a mind blower, and I think that will change.
If it's alien related, then obviously that's even more of a mind blower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
So, I just wanted to touch on something else that you spoke about Morecambe, and we talked about the energy in water, and you felt like there was energy in water, and it's funny because I use dowsing rods as part of paranormal investigations, and they're very good at picking up water, and I know. People have used them for centuries to find water. And the only way you could do that is if there's some kind of energy coming off of water.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that UFOs are also seen going underwater as well.
Yeah.
So.
And you also find as well that a lot of ley lines tend to follow water. And a lot of paranormal, incidents tend to happen around water as well. And I think that we have a certain affinity with natural water courses. I think some people are quite, it's like people that are attuned into paranormal energy. I think, some people are quite tuned into the energy that's given off by water. When you think about it as an organism, we are about 90% water anyway. And so to me, there has to be some sort of natural resonance between a person, whether or not you can feel it and you realize it's there, but between a person and the natural world around us. And I think that's how some people who are a little bit more attuned to what's going on around us can pick up on certain things like paranormal, like UFO activity, can go into a place and pick up on energies, pick up on emotions that have been left behind, often for hundreds of years, and also quite in tuned generally with nature as well. I mean, people who, believe in, Wicca, for instance, I think are more in tune with the landscape around them, and certainly, the water courses and water, whether it be flowing water or lakes, rivers, estuaries, as we were talking about before, some people are quite tuned into that.
I want to quickly go back to when you said about sort of being fed this information to help with our technology advancement, and we're sort of being given this information. So do you think that's our governments or whoever being in contact knowingly with some other being, or is it more a case of maybe certain people are giving information maybe like into the brains? Like, for example, you have people like Nikola Tesla and other similar people who will just have these amazing ideas and creations and thoughts that no one else would even come close to. So is it sort of like they're giving information that way to us so someone can make that discovery, and that's how we make that advancement? Or do you think the governments are in contact with beings of some sort?
I don't know. I think it's probably a bit of both, to be honest. I mean, if you look back through history, you've got people like, you mentioned Nikola Tesla. Look at somebody like Leonardo da Vinci, for instance, who was way ahead of his time, really. I mean, he was coming up with all sorts of, miraculous flying machines, and he was, I can't remember the century that he lived in, but I mean, it was way before any sort of technological advancement at all. I mean, he was coming up with corkscrew machines and, you know, flying machines and all sorts of things. I don't know, to be honest. It's not something that I'm an expert in or I've done a lot of research in. My own thoughts are that it's probably a little bit of both. I think some people are probably receptive to ideas, shall we say. I certainly think that governments have had contact of some sort. And I think this is one of the reasons why we've got this undercurrent of, you know, a group of people who keep talking about disclosure, because they know that there's something going on, but they don't know what that is. And I think governments are too scared to reveal the truth because of the panic, probably, that it would create. Because when you think about it, you know, probably 75% of the culture that we live in today, right across the world, is built on religion. And if suddenly you started talking about aliens and UFOs, and that does tend to blow religion a little bit out of the water, and there'd have to be a massive reset, I think, in society in order to be able to, you know, to be able to accept that we are not alone, and we are in contact with species that are a lot more technologically advanced than us. And I think there's a bit of an inherent problem with that as well, because, you know, we've all seen the Hollywood films where, you know, we come into contact with a spacefaring race and the first thing they want to do is eat us, or, you know, pinch our water supply, or drain the seas dry, or, you know, plug us in and use us as batteries. Do you know what I mean? So I think there would probably be a massive worldwide panic. But, you know, I think it's going to come, but I think it's going to be something, I think it's going to be something very small, like, and it might not even be in our lifetime, because I do believe that there is life somewhere in the solar system, albeit, you know, very simple life. But even if they did find single-celled or, you know, multi-celled life, very primitive life on, say, you know, the oceans of Europa or somewhere like that, then that changes everything, but it does it in a very gentle way. It's not the same as, you know, three-eyed, seven-foot-tall green monster, you know, that has a liking for, you know, cows or whatever, suddenly appearing on the news at 10, you know, saying we've been watching you for the last 50 years and, you know, we gave you nuclear weapons. And do you know what I mean? It will be a little bit gentler, and then I think governments would sort of build up from there and say, look, you know, we're not actually the only life in the universe, and there's this and this, and they'd start to sort of build up from there. But I think the whole disclosure thing's interesting, because there are people obviously out there. I mean, there are people out there who are making a living out of this when there isn't an awful lot of truth in what they're saying, and they're just, you know, recycling the same old guff that they've been recycling for years. But I think there are people that have worked within the military and have worked within governments, especially in America, but also, you know, in Britain, I think in Russia as well. In other European countries, developed nations, I think, you know, there are people that do know what's going on. But I think there's only a very select few, and those people, I don't think, are ready to divulge exactly what it is that's been going on. But like I said, there are people out there that seem to make quite a good living out of, you know, recycling the same old, you know, disclosures coming. Well, okay, fine, when's it coming then? Well, no, but it's coming. I don't know when it's coming, but it is coming, you know, so... You know, a certain person that we mentioned earlier on.
He's a very divisive character.
He is, yeah. Don't talk to Philip Mantle about
it. No. Sworn enemies.
Absolutely.
So one thing, as we sort of been talking on our podcast in general, we obviously spoken to a lot of people over the last couple of years. Well, been mediums, UFO experts, abductees, all manner of people. And I just wondered, as part of your research for your books, have you noticed any sort of correlation when people are talking about some of the spirits they've seen or the ghosts they've encountered? Has there been any other kind of phenomena attached to it, like a cryptid or a UFO or something else strange as part of the package of experience they've had?
Not that I can recall specifically, no. Okay. The paranormal stuff that I tend to investigate and that I tend to talk to people about, they do just seem to be paranormal incidents in isolation. Oh. There's no sort of UFO sighting involved, or there's no feeling of any sort of cryptid being involved or anything like that. They do tend to be purely what you would call your classic sort of paranormal. You probably remember that when I've spoken to you in the past, I told you about the time when I saw Shadow Man. Mm-hmm. And the more research I do into that, interestingly, the more it seems to be that one of the schools of thought is that actually they are incursions from either another time or another place or another dimension. And they could, in fact, be some sort of UFO phenomena attached to them, as in, aliens, in effect, that are coming through into our dimension. You could sort of expand that, really, I think, to any certainly some types of hauntings, some types of paranormal experience. You've got a certain type of haunting. You've got your poltergeist, you've got your replay type haunting, but then you've also got these strange these figures, these dark figures, these shadow man figures that seem to be something a little bit different. I've always been interested in poltergeists and whether or not poltergeist, whether it is energy that's being given off by a person who is acting almost like a magnet for these types of spirits that are then using that energy to be able to physically move objects. There's been a few quite strange things happening in my house recently.
I was going to come on to that because last time we spoke, you'd bought a piano.
Yeah,
if I remember rightly.
Yeah,
and right. Things.
Well, things have accelerated somewhat, really, and there's some quite odd things been happening. But I'll get onto that in a while, if that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of the paranormal stuff that I have talked to people about or I've experienced myself seem to be sort of what you would class as you sort of classic paranormal type activity, albeit some of it's a bit poltergeisty, some of it's these dark shadowy figures, some of it is quite clearly what people call the stone tape theory, where they're just recordings of energy that's happening again and again and again. Obviously, whatever trigger there is to make that recording happen at any particular time is obviously, up for discussion. I've got quite an interesting theory about the legends that have grown up in the area where I live. Obviously, I live around Pendle Hill, and obviously there's been over the years the myth of the Pendle witches and everything has all grown up around the area. And there's been a lot of UFO sightings, especially over the last, since the Second World War, they've been recorded and written down. People have written their accounts down more. There's been reports, more reports to the police. There's more reports got into the press. Freedom of Information Acts and so on. With you can see that the level of detail is obviously now a lot better than it was, let's say, going back to the turn of the last century. But there have been sightings in this area going back to the turn of the 20th century and before that. Some of the local newspapers have reports back in the late 1890s, early 1900s of strange lights being seen in the sky. And a lot of the time they were attributed to the paranormal. So when they saw, a light in the sky, they thought it was a ghost, or they thought it was a witch on a broomstick with a lantern. Now, as daft as it may sound, that's where that sort of folklore comes from. Because I believe that's where it comes from. If you go back, say, 200 or 300 years and you're living in the 17th century, for instance, and you know about, what happened with the Pendle witches and the witchcraft and everything else, and, it gets into folklore, it gets into local stories that people tell each other, it starts to get a little bit embellished, it starts to get a little bit more fantastical, and then suddenly you see a light in the sky. Now, this is way before, we discovered how to fly, for instance. Let's say, it's the 1850s or whatever. First thing you're going to think about is, wow, that's a witch on a broomstick with a lantern flying over Pendle Hill, because that's how you would you'd rationalize seeing something like that. But in reality, I think there's been a lot of UFO sightings over the years, and I think they've been going back, hundreds of years. And again, talking about water, talking about the geology of a place and the geology of the land acting as a magnet and bringing these types of phenomena, whether they are UFOs or something else, into an area. So, like I said, you've got Morecambe Bay, you've got the area around Pendle Hill, you've got the area around the Rosendale Valley, which is just a little bit south of here, north of Manchester. And I've read some theories by Jenny Randalls about why certain areas seem to be hotbeds of UFO activity, and she attributes a lot of that to the geology of an area, the interaction between the different types of rocks and everything that can, in some instances, and I agree with this, produce some type of energy that either maybe we don't understand, or some sort of magnetic energy which is acting as a magnet in effect to bring in these craft. And again, when you look at things like ley lines, you look at where ley lines run, all the main ley lines, they all cross, intersect in areas where you get a lot of UFO activity. There are two major ones that cross here on Pendle Hill, a north-south one and an east-west one. And in fact, the east-west one does run from the west coast of Lancashire, so quite close to the southern part of Morecambe Bay, and it goes all the way across through North Yorkshire to crossing the coast in just very close to Whitby, and all that area around there, of course, is high in very odd things. You only have to talk to a certain Mr. Sinclair who lives up there, so that's the area that he covers. So these ley lines, I think, also follow a lot of geological do you call them faults? Do you call them mysteries? Who knows? But there's definitely something that's channeling this energy.
So it's weird. I've got so many thoughts coming through right now, stuff that I've picked up over the last few weeks, and this seems to be an opportunity to bring it up on the things that you're talking about. So I watched a program, and we've actually done an episode on the Hestalen Lights.
Okay.
So it's a valley in Norway where almost daily for a very long period of time, and still now, there are mysterious like plasma orbs going across the sky, going around the valleys, all witnessed, documented, photographed, video, whatnot. And they actually talked about, on this program I watched yesterday, they talked about the geology of the area. And the fact that there was certain type of rock one side of the valley and a certain type of rock the other side of the valley, and they were creating a positive and negative charge
Yeah.
And it resulted in an increase in voltage in the middle. Yeah. And the result of that, they think, is that there was more plasma or light activity. Mm. So that could be, and that ties into the geology bit that you're talking about, the particular area.
Yeah.
And certain areas seem to be more of a hotbed of activity. Yeah,
absolutely.
And the other thing I want to talk to you about, shadow people.
Mm.
So, and I know that's a big thing that you've shared with us before.
Yeah.
And your first book was The Shadow Man of Accrington. So I've just finished a book called Skinwalkers at the Pentagon. So anybody that doesn't know about it, it's the follow-on book to Hunt for the Skinwalker. So it talks around, in the new book, around ATIP, ORSAP, and the government projects in America to investigate UFOs and whatnot. And it brings it up to date. But they talk about people who visit Skinwalker Ranch or have close encounters, for want of a better phrase, with phenomena, namely orbs, that they seem to wake up in the middle of the night and there's this shadow figure in the bedrooms or leaning over them. And then their families, there's like a hitchhiker effect. It comes off Skinwalker Ranch and it kind of infects the family. So other members of the family start seeing this shadow figure in the corner of the room or as a presence. So it's interesting that you should talk about Pendle and like the lights there and the fact that there's also these shadow figures. You've seen one yourself as well.
Yeah. I'm still seeing them. I am still seeing them.
Oh, wow.
Actually in the house. And I'm
shit me.
Well, okay. Yeah, no, but again, you see this links in with the piano. You see, I do believe that objects can hold energies and can hold what you would probably call spirits. Now, when we bought this piano, which was, it sounds very posh, doesn't it? We bought a piano. It cost us a couple of grand from a second-hand piano shop quite close by. And I've tried to sell it back to him and he won't have it because I told him I think there's something attached to it. And he said, no, I don't want it. But he told me where it came from, and I've traced the history of it with the manufacturer. It's German. It was made in Germany pre First World War, and it's by a company called Bluthner, and they're quite a good manufacturer. So they keep very very meticulous records of who they sell them to and when when they're serviced and tuned and everything else. So I've got all that. And I know that it was sat in a house for about 80 years before it was moved. It was with the same family for all that time. And then it came to us and we bought it because my son, who's now got absolutely no interest whatsoever in anything other than streaming, and he's 16 shortly, but when he was sort of like 5, which is when we got it, we've had it about 10 years. He wanted to learn to play the piano, which is why we bought a piano. So it's nothing to do with being posh or middle class or anything like that. It's just that we wanted James to play the piano. He wanted to learn it because actually his mum's side of the family are really really musical. They're all. I could go off on a complete tangent about how musically talented they are, but I won't. But that's where it all came from. But I always felt that there was something a little bit odd about this piano. It's sat in the dining room, and I look at it and I think, it's a lovely bit of kit. It looks lovely. So really, decoratively, it looks lovely, even if you never play it. But there's just something attached to it, and we started to get it as soon as we bought it. We started to get some bad luck, right? So, there were a few bad things happened and with regards to jobs and members of the family becoming ill and that sort of thing. Not myself or my wife or my son, but close family members and what have you. And it always seemed to be that the dining room suddenly always just became much colder than the rest of the house. Now, it was always a cold room. When we moved in, it was a cold room. But it's a lot colder. So there's definitely, it's either something that was already there that has been disturbed by bringing this piano in, or there was something's come in with the piano. But one way or another, there's something has now manifested itself. And for quite a number of years, we all used to see shadows in the house. So we'd be sat in the lounge watching TV or whatever, and, you know, we'd both see a shadow in the corner of the room. And people said to me, well, it's cars going past. Well, no, it's not, because we live on a cul-de-sac and we get very few cars, and especially at night when it's, you know, you close your curtains, it's dark outside, you can tell the difference between car lights and something else, and this is something else. This is not created by car lights. And there's been quite a few times where I've been sat there with my wife, Sarah, and we've both looked at each other and said, did you see that? And it happened not too long ago where we both sat there and we were both watching TV, and then we both suddenly, and we noticed each other doing it, we both looked up into the corner of the room and we both tracked something going across the top of the ceiling to the other side of the room. And then we stopped and looked at each other and we both said at the same time, did you see that? And it was like, it was a dark shape that was moving across from one side of the room to the other. Now, there's also been things like my son, for instance, goes into the lounge, into the dining room, and he'll go in and he'll say, Dad, it's freezing. And he said, but it's colder over here than it is over here. And he'll walk to one corner of the room and he'll say, it's freezing over here. And then he'll go to another side of the room and he'll say, and it's warmer over here. So he can pick up that temperature change. And it's quite, marked, if you know what I mean. You can, you know, there's a real change in probably 10 degrees, maybe even more than that. It's that dramatic. And then I suddenly, about four or five years ago, and it's all building up to a crescendo, is this, about 4 or 5 years ago, I started getting these really weird smells. And the only way that I can describe it is that it was like really strong perfume. Old lady perfume. So, you know, the stuff that your grandma used to cover herself from head to foot in, you know, like lavender or, you know, whatever, that really strong, gets in the back of your throat type of smell, you know. And it was mainly in the kitchen in the house. I didn't really pick it up anywhere else. It was, and I couldn't for the life of me work out what it was, where it was coming from. Don't have any plug-in air fresheners or out daff like that. You know, we've got a few smelly candles in the lounge aspect, but this was much, much stronger, and really quite, you know, intense. And this kept coming and going. And in fact, it happened about 2 weeks ago, one Friday morning. I was off work making myself a brew in the kitchen, and I suddenly got this absolute hit of, it was like really cheap, nasty perfume, really strong. And I could not work out where it was coming from. None of the windows were open. I walked out of the kitchen into the hallway and I couldn't smell it. I walked back into the kitchen, I could smell it. I was going through the bin to see if there was anything in the bin. I was checking the, you know, has somebody left something under the grill? I was looking in the fridge. I could not work out where it was coming from. But the most bizarre one that happened was about 6 months ago now. And I've mentioned this in the book, actually. I was taking the dogs out for a walk one lunchtime. And we've got like a vestibule. So we've got a front door. And then there's like a little sort of vestibule that's probably about 3 foot, 4 foot square, something like that, even that. And then the glass door, and then we're into the hallway downstairs. And we hang the dog leads up in there and the coats and everything else. So I went into the vestibule, got the dogs in, started putting the dog's leads on. And there was a bit of junk mail that was stuck halfway between through the letterbox. So half of it was sticking out, you know, outside into the outside, and half of it was sticking in to the vestibule. Now, the letterbox we have is a really heavily sprung letterbox, so you have to lift it to pull anything out. in effect. So if you've got a letter that's stuck in there, you can pull it through, but you have to give it a real good old yank, and it makes a snapping noise, that like that. You know, it's a really, really heavy spring. So I'm there putting the dog's leads on, and all of a sudden this letter comes out of the letterbox at speed. It's like somebody has grabbed hold of it from the inside and pulled it, and it dropped onto the floor. And the letterbox made that cracking noise, the metal noise that it does when somebody snaps it shut. There was nobody outside because we have a glass door on the outside, a glass frame on the outside door, so I could see through. There was nobody stood outside shoving it through. I obviously didn't grab hold of it and pull it, but there must have been something grabbed hold of it with force to pull it through the letterbox, and it just dropped onto the mat in front of me. And I just looked at it, and strangely enough, it didn't. I thought, oh, that's a bit weird, and carried on getting, because the dogs were creating by this point, so I was getting the leads on, whatever. Took them out for a walk, and it was only when I was halfway around my walk, I suddenly thought, what the bloody hell? What was that? How did, you know, what was it? Was it something that was there that was trying to grab my attention, and the only way that it could do it was to actually physically move something, and it decided to, you know, pull this letter through the letterbox, physically move the letter and drop it on the floor in front of me. And like I said, the dogs were creating, they were barking. I know they were excited because they were going out, but there might have been something else as well that they were picking up on that you know, was making them behave in the way that they were. But this, I mean, to me, this was typical poltergeist activity. It was physically moving an object, and there would have to have been a lot of force behind it in order to pull the letter through the letterbox. That was quite a strange experience.
Very weird. And you mentioned that you put that experience in the book. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the book itself?
Yeah. You have to buy it to read it.
Obviously. Yeah.
Because there's some really great stories in there.
Give too much away.
Obviously. No. It's very similar to the first book. It's a collection of personal stories that people have contacted me about. There are some stories about the town of Accrington, particularly around some investigations done into Warner Street, which ties in quite nicely, actually, with the Shadow Man sighting that I had all those years ago. So it's a sort of continuation of that. There's some quite interesting and quite nasty poltergeist activity going on in one of the shops on Warner Street. Warner Street's been well known for many, many years, actually, has been an area of quite high paranormal activity, the whole area around there. There's been a lot of investigations done over the years by various different investigation groups. One of them I spoke to at length about their experience. They were specifically asked to go into this particular shop by the owner because of the amount of activity that went on there. So I document that. Turns out that there was a murder in there quite a while ago, last century, turn of the last century. And that ties in quite nicely, actually, to some evidence that I've managed to dig up, again, with regards to a very tall, dark, shadowy figure, which you could possibly describe as a shadow man. And I do think there's some correlation between that and the figure that I saw. So I go into that in the book and the evidence and the reasoning behind that. And then I talk quite a bit about the Ribble Valley, which is the area that I live in, some of the local legends and ghost stories, some quite interesting ones that I've picked up from people, really. I mean, some of them I've been, you know, just having a pint in the pub and chatting to people and they start, you know, telling you these local stories and what have you. Really interesting one about an allotment site, actually, very close to the village, which strangely enough, there's a stream runs through it, and there's been some quite strange activity seen around where an old well is built. Again, very dark figures. The guy that was telling me about this, he described it as like a floating black mass that he saw hovering around where this this old stone well's built. And there's been a number of sightings from other people as well, various different strange things in that area. There's been a ghostly dog that's followed somebody into one of the pubs in the village that was seen by quite a few people and then it disappeared. So that was quite an interesting story. And there's a lady in the village as well who owns a, now don't laugh, it's a haunted ice cream shop. but actually she's a medium. She has this shop, which is well known actually for, she makes her own ice cream, but it's also a sort of corner shop type thing as well. I interviewed her on the podcast probably about 12 months ago now, a lady called Mandy. She's got a very interesting ghost, which is attached to the building that she has a shop in. And I then look at sort of the Pendle Witches again, looking at it from a slightly different angle this time, looking at the interrogation techniques that have been recorded that they used, comparing those to some of the other notable witch trials that were happening at the same time. I also talk about some of the lesser known witch cases in Lancashire, because for about 200 or 300 years really after the Pendle Witches, which were in 1612, there were quite a number of other lesser known cases as well. Quite a few other miscarriages of justice as well. People who've been, you know, accused of witchcraft and various accusations. So there's a chapter on that, which is quite interesting, comparing, you know, the different stories. And then, of course, we look at the UFO stuff as well. So I'll look at Morecambe Bay, as we've discussed, look at the area around there, go into that in a little bit more depth. And then the final chapter is all about my haunted furniture and my piano.
Where can people get the book from?
Well, it's available on Amazon. So, my website, which is craigbryant.co.uk, has got links on there to both of the books on Amazon, and also links to the podcast as well. So, yeah. They're available on Amazon.
Cool. Well, thanks very much again, Craig, for coming on, saying some fascinating insights and stories. It's always amazing to...
Yeah, no problem. We went off my area of expertise a little bit on that, but I hope
and mine.
I hope it was well. Yeah, I mean, this is what it's all about, isn't it? You know, I mean, certainly the UFO stuff I think is quite interesting, and I hope I didn't come out with too much rubbish.
no more than I do. But no, yeah, right. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. It's been great talking to you. Thank you.
Definitely.
Pursuit of the Paranormal with Ash and Greg.